It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 93 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-host, Linda Serovich. Hi, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Kellyanne Healy. Hello, Kellyanne.
Hello, Allison. Hello, Linda.
Hello.
Hello.
This time we come to you from our respective homes and not from the Citi Field parking lot. Something that is happening live right now is the All-Star game. And last night, the Home Run Derby happened. Linda and I got to podcast with the SB Nation MLB folks during that live. And we got to watch Pete win live on that podcast, which I should probably link to if I can like find the recording where that actually is. But I'm pretty sure it got pushed out to like all the SB
Nation, it's there.
MLB it's feeds. Yeah. So it should be in your feeds if you subscribe to this show, right? If anybody who subscribes to this show should get that show. It's probably lengthy. I haven't actually like checked to see
they cut it to 2.5 hours.
Okay. Okay.
They shortened it. Yeah.
They must have shortened it somewhat because it's like a 3-hour recording because we recorded during the entire Home Run Derby, but
which was, I bet, longer than expected.
But when we make the tweets and when we make the tweets for this episode, I'll try to get timestamps for you guys for when Linda and I are talking. We talk at the very beginning and at the very end, basically.
Well, I shriek at the very end.
Yeah, you hear us like shrieking because they brought us back on because you know they kind of did a thing where like the host talked at the beginning and like set up the whole home run derby, talked about the bracket and like what to expect and all that, and then they kind of did 10 or 15 minutes or so with like a bunch of the different SB Nation community MLB sites. And so they would talk about like those respective teams and chat a little bit about them. So at the beginning of the show, we chatted a little bit about the draft, about Kumar Rocker, who we'll get to in a minute. And we chatted about, you know, where the Mets might go at the deadline. And then, you know, this was all as the Home Run Derby was happening. So there are also like reactions spattered throughout each of these segments. And then toward the end, they brought us back on because Pete Alonso was in the final. And you know, we got to react live with them as he wanted. So that was a really fun time. I encourage you guys to check it out.
I don't think they were ready for live Linda reactions.
Yeah, they were not prepared for what we are like. Like anyone who listens to this podcast and hears our live game reacts.
Linda has some excellent reactions.
Yes.
Live reactions. It's
anyone
amazing.
Who's a regular listener of our podcast knows that we do live game reactions and is familiar with how we do them, but they were not prepared for our energy. But I regret nothing.
No, neither do I. I mean, we were excited. Come on.
Yeah,
it's Pete.
Pete Alonso won the Home Run Derby for the second straight time. Like, it was glorious. And, like, you know, he did it pretty easily too.
Tired at all. Like, Ohtani was like bent over and Pete just like bam, 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 bam. All right, done.
Every single player looked pretty gassed.
Well, because it's Coors Field too. So, like, so your body reacts differently to the thin air.
They were showing Pete in between rounds and he's just like zen.
He was vibing.
In the locker room.
He's been hanging out with Stroman, clearly.
But yeah, but the vibes were immaculate.
I think he and Soto were in like the waiting room or wherever. And I think Soto was trying to talk to him and Pete was not having it. He was just chilling against the wall, totally zenning out.
Like, I had seen some people on Twitter react to the fact that, like, a lot of the other players, like, during their round or, like, when they were taking their break that they get to take each round in the middle, like, I had seen a lot of people reacting to the fact that, like, a lot of the other guys, like, they had other players, like, running around and, like, hyping them up during that time and, like, nobody was doing that for Pete. And I was like, guys, I think it's because he like extremely needs to be in his own head during this. Like, you can tell he was like in it to win it and just being like very competitive about it.
Well, Ty came over
at one point.
Ty came over a couple times, I think. And I guess he told Pete hit 35 and Pete's like, all right, I'll hit 35.
Why not? And Pete was hello. Just hitting, like, I mean, I tweeted something like this during the Derby, but like, Pete is literally a player that is genetically engineered for this contest. Oh. Like, he is just a large goofball who loves hitting the ball as hard as he possibly can. And this gives
Pete's
him the opportunity
natural
to
element,
do that.
Basically.
Yeah, this is literally what Pete Alonso was crafted for, is this specific event. And so no surprise that he won it again. I think, you know, people who are just general baseball fans and didn't necessarily have a rooting interest because a guy from their team was in it or something. I think a lot of people wished that Ohtani had advanced. And I wish that too, but you know,
given the way ESPN was hyping him up, like it was all Ohtani, Ohtani, Ohtani.
I mean, and they should be, because Ohtani is the most fun player in baseball.
He's a fantastic player, but I was just like, oh my God, this is setting him up to like fail in the
dust. Yeah, the expectations were pretty sky high. And like, you never, like, you know, obviously like hitting home runs in an in-game situation is completely different than hitting batting practice home runs or whatever.
Yes.
So like, just because Ohtani led the league in home runs, which is a very impressive thing, you know, even more impressive probably than winning this. Yeah.
Yeah.
But just because he leads the league in home runs doesn't mean he's going to be
it's
the best
translate.
At the Derby. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I don't think Piazza ever hit any when he competed. And then he stopped because he was like, I'm so bad in the Derby.
I'm so bad at this.
I refuse to compete. And he's like that Seinfeld episode. I choose not to run.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's like, because, you know, Pete, his first year, said he talked to a lot of people. He talked to Todd Frazier. He talked to Cano. And they said, you can't go all out because you need to save your energy because there's so many rounds. And that's what got Vladito into trouble.
Yeah.
In 2019. So there's strategy involved, too. You can't just go up there and go bam, 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 and expect to win.
I was going to say, but Vlad had the other issue of his second round would never end with Jock Peterson.
Yeah.
It was just going on and on and on and on.
That happened again with
Soto. Yeah.
But I think they changed the rules this time around.
Well, they changed the tiebreak.
Because of that.
Yeah, I think because of that. They changed the tiebreak. So this year there was a round that tied twice. So like the Soto round, it was tied. And then they did, like a minute, another minute, and then it was tied again, and then they did like three swings, basically. I think you could take pitches, but it was like three swings, and Soto just like hit them all out. So it was like, well, there you go. But I mean, the Home Run Derby was a ton of fun. I had so much fun watching it. It was basically an ideal final for me because everyone knows that I am an Orioles fan, a pseudo Orioles fan, and Trey Mancini was in the Derby and I wanted him to do well, not just because he's an Orioles, a Birdland boy, but obviously he's such a great story having come back from cancer and come back from chemo and treatment and to be, you know, doing as well as he is this year and killing it and being in the Home Run Derby finals. It's just like freaking awesome. Couldn't have asked for a better final than that. Pete Alonso versus Trey Mancini. So much fun. Like just ideal. It was great.
I won't lie. I like half wanted to see Mancini win.
I know. I was like, I wouldn't mind that a little bit. Yeah. I mean, like,
I would have enjoyed that just because that's the biggest, like I said it on Twitter last night. It's the biggest kind of like fuck cancer that's manifested itself like visually that you can see. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's so true. I think it like, I was still rooting for Pete, especially because like by the time like Pete was in the final, we were like live on the podcast and I was like feeling the energy and I was ready.
Yeah.
Like that was really
your
fun.
Head?
Yeah.
I think
head.
I was
literally. And so like, I wanted Pete to win, but I would not have been upset at all if he lost to Mancini. That would have been like fine by me.
But it just seemed like Pete had it the whole time. Like yeah. He was never stressed.
Never
like,
stressed, just never gassed.
No, he just got into a groove and in that was that. Like,
it
and
was
also,
never really
all
in
the
doubt.
Credit. Yeah, all the credit to Joust.
Oh my gosh.
The real MVP. Like, if you, I don't know if you guys have seen, but some people tweeted like hit basically his like strike zone.
Yes.
Like,
oh my God. It was crazy.
Perfect.
He was throwing perfect strikes to Pete the entire time, which is like wild. And it makes such a big difference. Because that was part of the reason, honestly, Ohtani got eliminated in the first round.
Yeah.
Ohtani was gassed. So that was part of it. But the other part of it is that his pitcher was not necessarily throwing him strikes, but not throwing him like pitches like in his happy zone, like where he likes them. Because Ohtani's a high ball hitter, and at one point he literally motioned to his pitcher like he waved his hand up as in like throw the ball up,
yep.
Like throw it higher. And then he got into a groove after that because I think his pitcher realized like, oh, I'm not throwing it in the right spot for him. Like his power alley is high pitches. So like once he started throwing it to him that way, it was better, but like it was too late at that point.
Well, I mean, Pete had to overcome his pitcher in 2019.
No, I was going to say last time he did not have a very good.
He did not have Joust.
He did not have Joust. But shout out to Joust, the real MVP.
Well, and like, I looked it up. Joust was Nomar Garcia Parra's coach.
Oh, that's cool.
When he won. Yeah,
that's cool. So, yeah.
So he has experience. So Pete picked a good one this time.
I was going to say, and Pete's other motive is made. Whoa, motivation is the money. His winnings from the Home Run Derby have already eclipsed his actual earnings playing for two and a half seasons now.
Yep, which is like, pretty wild.
Yeah.
Like, at MLB, where are your priorities? Like, seriously. But
well, also, how heartwarming was it to see all of his teammates like tweeting and like Lindor was watching?
Oh my God, the video of Lindor watching was so good.
Yeah, it's with his little baby.
I loved May's graphic with the polar bear face.
Oh, yes, and which he made himself.
Fantastic.
So,
like,
good.
May went all out, like, he went hard.
Yeah, just like we love it. Like, they've been like this all year. They're so supportive of each other. It's just really great to see. Like, the team has just such good camaraderie and energy. Like, I just really love this team.
Yeah, like all of a sudden McCann got more active on Twitter. Nito was tweeting. And then I think like the Instagram they posted, it was Lindor, Villar, Diaz, Peterson, and Drew Smith.
Yeah.
Oh, and of course, Stroman was tweeting too.
And Stroman, yeah, of course. Yeah. Stroman's always tweeting. He never
Stroman's always tweeting.
Yes.
So Stroman's like a given at this point.
But speaking of the Mets being supportive, so Taiwan Walker was named as a replacement in the All-Star game. So last time, you know, we podcasted last Monday at Citi Field, Taiwan Walker had not yet been named to the All-Star game. It was obviously Jacob deGrom, and Jacob deGrom elected not to go. And I don't know if it was a direct one-to-one replacement, but basically like a bunch of guys opted out, and whether due to injury or just other reasons, there are some guys that have like I know Carlos Correa, for example, like his wife is pregnant, so he wanted to spend time with her. So So guys opted out, and so other guys were named as replacements, and Taiwan Walker was one of the pitchers named as a replacement for the National League. So that's very exciting, very well deserved. All of his teammates were super excited about it on Twitter. I know Marcus Stroman's been saying it for a long time, like, Ty needs to be an all-star. So I'm very happy about that, and hopefully he makes it in the game. The game is being played as DeGrom we podcast.
Explicitly say in one of his post-game conferences that he was going to try and get Taiwan Walker there, not just say he hoped he would get there, but like actually actively try to get him there.
Yeah, he did. I'm not misremembering that.
Okay.
No.
God, I love this.
I think having Jake say something, because it was like basically the next day Taiwan Walker was named this to the All-Star game. So I think having the best pitcher in baseball endorse you.
Yeah, say this.
Like, so it's that's going like, to make people listen, know this,
but yeah, I mean, so the All-Star game is literally happening right now as we podcast. The American League is winning, as they usually do, I feel like.
Every damn year,
every year they win. And you know, it's a cool All-Star game, especially with Ohtani in it, and Ohtani doing what he's doing, which no one has ever done. Like, he's DHing, and he's DHing and he started the game. Like, he's already out of the game. He already pitched. But he pitched, he had a 1-2-3 inning, and he's DHing, which is insane. Obviously, it's
fantastic.
Every time I wish I loaded the tweet ahead of time, but there's a tweet, and it's probably one of the funniest baseball tweets I've ever read. It's like, it's up there in the baseball tweet hall of fame, along with like, shut the fuck up, I'm calculating win probability, Jesus Christ, that one. this other tweet is like, every Angels game I see, it's like,
yes,
Trout hit a home run and raised his average to 526, and Shohei Ohtani did something that no one's done since like tungsten the arm in 1906, and the Angels lost 8-3 or something like that.
Yes,
it's
like,
it's such a good tweet. Yeah.
Then there was another one similar.
Oh wait, I found it.
Yeah, read it.
Okay, go.
Every time I see an Angels highlight, it's like, Mike Trout hit 3 home runs today and raised his average to 528. Well, Shohei Ohtani did something that hasn't been done since Tungsten Arm O'Doyle of the 1921 Akron Groomsman, as the Tigers defeated the Angels 8-3.
Yeah, and the tweet I saw like in that vein was like, I think it's like they have the Angels have like the best players, or the, I forget what it was, basically like the two best players, and they're still going to lose 100 games.
Yeah, like it's incredible. That's
failure. God. Like, oh, and wait, I've also forgot that, you know, Taiwan Walker also said he was excited to go see Pete win the home run derby when he got the nominee. That was the thing he was most looking forward to,
was seeing Pete win the home run derby.
He specifically said win the home run derby.
Yes,
so
yes.
Taiwan Walker called it. All right, so now back to Shohei.
Back to Shohei Ohtani.
So,
he's the coolest player in baseball. And, like, there was an article, I think, I can't remember if it was posted today or yesterday, but I think it was Jared Diamond wrote it. That's basically like, Ohtani's getting all these comparisons to Babe Ruth, but that's actually unfair because he's actually better than Babe Ruth.
Yeah, he has no comparison, basically.
See, that's the whole thing. I get frustrated with just comparisons in general. Oh, like his swing is like this guy, or his defense is like this guy. These guys are individuals and they're going to make their own mark.
Yeah,
like, so Shohei Ohtani
is doing is unprecedented. Like,
Babe Ruth could not do that.
Babe Ruth cannot do what Ohtani is doing. And Babe Ruth
was playing like plumbers or
exactly.
He was playing the firefighters and the community helpers.
The only like maybe comparison that you could maybe do if you're really looking for a comparison to Shohei Ohtani is you have to go back to the Negro Leagues. That's where you have to look for it, because those were the true two-way players. If you go back to the Negro Leagues, those are the last time you had like actual two-way players playing against other, you know, two-way players and other like real baseball players. So it's pretty amazing.
I don't understand why they have to compare Ohtani to somebody.
I feel that way kind of about every player, but more so in the case of players that do have elite talent. that it's like once in a generation type talent.
Yeah, I guess you'll have to have something to like contextualize it so people can kind of understand what he's doing. Like the lay person, maybe.
I mean, I was going to say you can contextualize what he's doing though in a more general sense, not saying player A is like exactly like player B or can be compared to player B. I could just see being leveled here. Hey, here's what like the league average is. Here's how insane his stats are, or here's like all these stats from the past. And he's now doing all of this, doing all these crazy things that we haven't seen before.
Yeah. And of course, I mean, I feel like I didn't even put this in the show notes because it just happened, but I feel like we need to address this. Of course, we have Stephen A. Smith out there.
Yeah.
Like, oh God.
Talking bullshit about Ohtani. Like it's just so annoying that like the guys with the platforms are the ones spewing this, like, racist bullshit about players. Cause of course, Stephen A. Smith, like he talked about like, oh, Ohtani's so good. And he's like the face of baseball, but it's like a shame that like the guy that's the face of baseball needs a translator because it makes it hard for like, you know, that baseball to market its game to the American public. And it's like, oh my God, go away.
Vaffanculo, Smith, get a translator for that.
Yeah. Translate that.
Translate that.
Kiss my dupa. Translate that.
Like, why don't you learn Japanese?
Sono es stupida. Stupido, excuse me.
Like, come on. I just...
And also, I did see somebody, like, I think they posted the picture of, like, him and Soto hugging, like, after their round. And it's like, these are two, like, phenomenal baseball players from two totally different countries, but they speak the language of baseball and they understood each other perfectly. And that's all you really need.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, like, the language of baseball transcends barriers. Like, and guess what? America isn't the only one celebrating Ohtani. Like, Japan,
goes bananas over.
Yeah, he's a superstar in Japan.
Well, his point was that, your MLB is trying to grow its game in America, and like the NBA, he basically tried to like explain it by saying like, the NBA and the NFL have like such younger audiences, and the MLB audience is older and whiter, and in order to market to that audience, like there's a barrier there. And I'm just like, how do you think you fix that? By diversifying the representation in the game. Like, now you have like young Asian fans see Ohtani and they see themselves in him. You see like you know young Japanese Americans get very excited about seeing themselves represented. Like, how do you think you grow the game? Like, part of the problem is that the audience is old and white. You need to go past that. And in order to grow past that, you need baseball to represent America.
If we can't just continue to whitewash baseball just because that's the norm.
Right. It's so stupid. And like,
Stephen Smith is stupido.
There's so many levels. There's so many levels of stupid about that because like, there's so much going on that makes it dumb, because first of all, like, I don't even see the like barrier that the translator presents here. Like, all that happens is that they give post-game quotes and then the translator gives it in English. Like, yeah, sure, there is an issue that some things might get lost in translation every now and again, but like,
it's probably the interjections, like or
yeah. And so, like, I don't see the barrier that he's like really talking about, A, and B, who cares? Like, his post-game quotes are not why people are excited about his time.
No.
His issue is that he doesn't speak English, and that's a crime.
Yeah.
Well, I do, like, watching a full season of Rangers hockey where they have very few players who speak English. So, if anything, it makes it just harder on the reporters because they have to wait. They have to ask their question. Then the translator has to translate it. Then it was usually Artemi Panarin would speak in Russian. He would give his answer in Russian. Then the translator would then have to translate it back in English. So the post game would take a little longer, but that's not my problem. That's the reporter's problem. And the reporter said they never had an issue. So
Linda,
I don't understand why now. I mean, I understand why people are complaining, but you're still getting the information. It just takes a little while longer.
I was gonna say, I don't think the reporters have an issue with it. I think the owners have an issue with it.
Yeah, we'll get
higher up. The Mariners.
I mean, you know, flashback to the Mariners situation, and they cry about paying for translators.
But I imagine that's a similar. That's not a unique feeling.
No,
amongst the owners, probably not.
But like Linda, I don't know enough about hockey to speak on this, so you can correct me if I'm wrong. But has anyone like complained to this level about hockey translators? Yeah,
not a single complaint about them speaking. I mean, and you have to get, I mean, I get there's a lot of languages in baseball, but hockey, it's a lot. Like just on the Rangers, they had Russians, they had Czech, they had Finnish, they had Swedish, they had English, they had, you know, like you can have six different languages on one team. They had a kid who speaks French because he's French Canadian. So that's
bonjour.
So now, that's six different. So, I mean, some of them did speak English as well, but if they didn't, that's six different translators you need and not a single complaint.
Listeners, I will give you three guesses and the first two don't count as to the difference between these, between the hockey players and the baseball players that people are complaining about. Can't quite put my finger on it.
Yeah. Who was it that, was it Gleyber Torres they originally complained about?
Gleyber Torres and the reliever on the Mariners. The Japanese reliever.
Yeah, what's the difference between Gleyber Torres and Artemi Panarin?
And there was also another, Latin prospect in the Mariners system that they were complaining about, that the owner was complaining about. It's the difference here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just so patently obvious, and I wish they would. Yeah, like we shouldn't again. So I'm gonna get off my soapbox about this because Stephen A. Smith
Iwakuma. Oh yeah,
Stephen A. Smith is not worth. Stephen A. Smith's baseball opinions are not worth anyone's time because he is not a baseball analyst. So he should probably stop talking.
ESPN just got hockey.
Is he gonna complain about Artemi Panarin next season speaking Russian?
I don't think his athletic opinions are worth anything from what I have seen of him. So,
well, and this is what ESPN wants. They fired all their journalists, so now that's they just have hot take artists. They're like, they're sports talk radio at this point.
Yeah.
I was going to say that. Yeah. I don't even like ESPN to begin with. So
they're like the fan at this point, basically.
Yeah. And it's like, I mean, to Jeff Passan's credit, he like went on ESPN later and basically pushed back against what Stephen A. Smith was saying. But it's like, okay, like cool, but like it rings kind of hollow coming from you, a white guy. Like, can we please get some diverse voices on here to talk about this that aren't you? I don't know.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Anyway, back to the Mets, as Steve Cohen would say.
We kind of went off tangent there for a minute.
That's okay. But the other major Mets thing that I want to talk about is obviously the Mets drafted Kumar Rocker in the first round of the draft.
I just saw a tweet. JD Davis tonight, 4-for-6 with a home run and 3 RBIs. In his last three games, Davis has 7 hits and 12 at bats.
That is in my show notes, Linda. Do not despair. We will be discussing. Okay, well, but future directions of the Mets, which includes JD Davis.
Just saying, my man seems ready. Okay,
he's ready. He's ready. He'll be back right after the All-Star break. So that's something to.
And then he's gonna get traded. No, I'm kidding.
No, that's straight from Syracuse Mets. That JD.
See, there's too much chatter about that, and I disagree with it entirely about trading him. I'm just gonna say that right now.
Even if obviously we know my opinion on this.
And like, listen.
Wait, Linda, you want him traded, right? Right.
What?
I'm kidding.
What? That was priceless. But like,
you should know I'm trolling you.
It was an Oppo home run too. Look at that.
Nice.
They blew out whoever they were playing. Yeah.
Even if they get Chris Bryant, which listen, I would be thrilled about. I don't think they should trade JD Davis because then he becomes like the most valuable pinch hitter on your team.
Yeah. You can have both. There's a way to get both.
Have your cake and eat it too.
Exactly. And
absolutely.
I learned this whole time. I was like, Chris Bryant is my birthday twin. They need to get Chris Bryant. I love Chris Bryant. And former writer Alex Nelson pointed out to me that former Mason Avenue writer Alex Nelson pointed out to me that there is a current Met who also is born on January 4th that I did not realize. Any guesses as to who that current Met is?
Joey Lucchese?
No, I was like, please let it be Joey Lucchese, but it was not.
I have no idea.
I don't know. Who?
It's Pilar.
Oh, no way. Fine.
Yes. I was like, oh my God, Pilar. I was like, I liked him before. I was like, no, I love him. I was like, I'm all in on the Pilar train.
Hell,
I mean,
yeah.
I already was.
That's awesome. My birthday twin is R.A. Dickey, which I will forever be proud of.
That's a good
one. That is
you
a
have
good
a
one.
Birthday twin, Kellyanne. I know you're near Jacob DeGrom.
I'm the day after Jacob DeGrom.
Ow.
That's close enough.
Yeah, so he's my birthday buddy, but we're not birthday twins.
That's close enough. That's pretty
good. I was going to say, and someone's on the 21st, too.
Oh, so they're like around you?
Yes, I'm sandwiched in there.
I don't think there are any current Mets with my birthday, but... Ari Dickey is good.
I might get a Pilar jersey if he sticks around.
You should. I mean, they're probably going to, I mean, he has an option for next year, which they will, like, in all likelihood, exercise.
Keep. Yeah, why not? All right. So, should I say it? Should I declare Pilar my new man?
Oh, no, that might be a dangerous proposition.
Oh, no.
Don't do that.
I really don't want to.
He already had his devastating injury this year. Is he going to have another one?
He overcame a fastball to the face. Declaring him my man. Being a man can't be any worse than that, can it?
Like, he can overcome that. It makes
him invincible. Yeah.
To man's declaring. But yeah, so I like back to Kumar Rocker. I speaking of jerseys, I'm like already ready to order my Kumar Rocker jersey as I'm thrown a pitch even in the Mets minor league system, and I'm like so hype about it. Like
he's fantastic.
I really still can't believe it's real that they.
I know.
It's I know.
One
right.
Of those things where it's like everything's coming up Mets, and I'm just like, this doesn't usually happen.
What's gonna What's go happening? Wrong?
No, like I said it on the SB Nation podcast. Like, there's a disturbance in the force. Like, something is up with the karma because good things are happening to the New York Mets, and New York Mets fans do not know how to process this, like, at all. First, it was like, you know, trading for and extending Lindor, and now like they're getting the good draft picks. It's like insane. And they're like paying over slot for the guys that they want, which is like new. I mean, not new this year, but like new in the past like couple years. Because they did that with Matthew Allen last year. And I mean, Matthew Allen had Tommy John surgery, so obviously like we haven't gotten to see him develop, but like prior to the Tommy John surgery, like, you know, he was on track to be like a very top prospect for the Mets. So like, and so like that seems to be working out for them. And it's just amazing that Kumar Rocker fell to them with, I mean,
I'm just still stunned at that.
I mean, there's
still
like,
stunned.
There's a combination of like legitimate. So like the reason he fell to 10, which is where the Mets drafted, there's like a combination of factors. And obviously for far more detailed and informed analysis about that, y'all should listen to From Complex to Queens, because I got you covered on all of this, along with all the other Mets draft picks, which we will not go into on this podcast. But It's a combination of the teams above the Mets doing weird stuff with like under slot so that they could save their draft pool for the other rounds and get good value from the later rounds. Like the Royals did that with their kind of weird pick that no one was expecting them to do. So it's like combination of the teams above them doing weird stuff. A little bit of undeserved probably prospect fatigue with Kumar Rocker a bit. Like, you know, he's just been like famous forever now. Like he's been the name for so long. And I feel like there is a certain amount of like, oh, you know, that guy, like he's overrated, even though that's not really true. And like a combination of those two things and actual legitimate concerns about Kumar Rocker that are founded in certain ways. Like he did lose fastball velocity and that's never a good sign. But you know, how much of that is due to like college workload and like working his way up to an MLB workload, and how much of that is like a, you know, a tweak in his delivery that the Mets can make that can help him in that regard. But like his slider is an MLB ready pitch today. Like it is a nasty, nasty pitch, and he knows how to use it, and he knows in what situations to use the secondary pitches. Like he's got the baseball acumen to be a top of the line rotation starter in the big leagues, from what I understand from people who know much more about this stuff than I do. But it's just a question of like getting that fastball velocity back up to what it was and, you know, making that pitch as good as his slider is. So I'm psyched. Like when Michael and I listened to the draft in the car, cause we were driving back from Vermont to see my brother. And Michael said before the draft, he was like, well, you know, there's a chance that Kumar Rocker could follow the Mets. And I like poo-pooed it. I was like, no, I'm not even like, don't even put that out there, because I don't want to think about it, because I don't want to get my hopes up. And I chastised him. I was like, you're getting your hopes up over something that's probably not happening. And he was like, I know, but I'm just excited. And then like as every pick went and he was still on the board, like we got more and more excited. I was like, see, you're getting my hopes up now. No, like you can't do this to me. And then I was like, and then the pick before the Mets went and it wasn't him and he was still on the board when the Mets were ready to pick. And I was like, no, you know what's happening? This is setting us up for maximum disappointment, because what's going to happen is that he's still going to be on the board, but the Mets are going to draft someone else. And then the fucking Nationals are going to draft him. I was like, I just know that's what's happening. I just know that's what's happening. Cause I have poisoned Mets fan brain.
I was going to say, Allison, this is not the Wilpon Mets anymore.
I know.
Hard to get over.
So much PTSD, man.
It is
so much trauma, but then
it
like
really is.
But then like I felt like the energy had built up so high, and then like the Mets pick came and they called his name, and Michael and I just like started screaming. We were like, ah! Like it was basically like we celebrated like we would celebrate if the Mets just walked it off in the bottom of the ninth. We were like, ah! It was pretty fun. It was pretty fun. So like, well, needless to say, I'm excited.
Even now, I think there's a billboard up, and I want to say in Queens.
I think it's in is it in Times Square? Or
I know somebody sitting. It was in Astoria. But it didn't. I mean, it doesn't matter where it is. It's the fact that like this is how stars are made. Like this is
it's
how.
There.
Yeah, this is how you market your team. Like we should be excited. Everybody in New York should be excited. We got like a kick-ass prospect, and like I feel like that kind of excitement has just been dormant for so long, and you know, now it just seems like everything about the organization is changing now that the Wilpons are gone. Like I don't want to, you know, keep putting everything like, oh, it was the Wilpons, like Cohen's our savior, like, but it makes a big difference. Like, you know, just looking at how Piazza was treated when he was traded here, and the massive amounts of press waiting for him at LaGuardia, like you knew he was a star, and you know that's just kind of gotten lost for a while. And you know, I want that excitement back, that buzz around New York again. And at least the Mets are trying to move in that direction.
Yeah, like it's if Kumar Rocker ends up being like, you know, ends up panning out to his prospect pedigree, like he will run this city. Like he will be a
superstar. He had a good attitude too. He seemed very confident.
He's confident, and he was just a man of few words, which in this case I enjoyed, especially like watching the draft it's seeing all the other players kind of surrounded by like everybody. He was just with his parents, kind of quiet, no hype. I really enjoyed that. That's usually how I roll. I prefer the silent ones that don't necessarily put themselves out into the limelight. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just my personal preference. So I'm really excited for him. He's really tall. He's 6'5".
Love our big tall pitchers.
We do. Yes. We do. He'll
Jake
fit right 6'4". In.
Noah 6'6".
Peterson's, I think, like 6'3", 6'4".
Yeah, Peterson's tall, too.
Poor Strowman. Yes. Oh, and Walker, too. He's tall.
Yeah, they're all tall, except Strowman.
Strowman.
Strowman rocks,
but height don't measure heart. We all know.
No, height does not measure heart, no. Plus, and I think Cookie might be, like...
Average-ish.
Average, yeah.
Plus, how cool of a baseball name is Kumar Rocker? Like, come on.
I know, but as growing up, like, in the 90s, just seeing a Rocker on a Mets jersey, like, I gotta get out of that.
No, it's a different Rocker.
I know, say, you gotta get the PTSD from John Rocker.
No relation.
Like, I get it. Completely different athlete, absolutely no relation, but it just, I still have flashbacks hearing Rocker.
Yeah, I get that.
It's hard,
but we'll reclaim it.
Yes, we're taking it back.
Taking it back. So yeah, I mean, like, as much as it was frustrating for the first half to end for the Mets as it did with that like really annoying loss on Sunday, you know, I feel like a lot of the bad taste in the mouth got washed out with the Kumar Rocker pick. It's very exciting. You know,
and they did play 31 games in 33 days to close the season. So.
Exactly. And it was a bullpen game.
Oh my God, that's a brutal, brutal schedule. With like not a full rotation. Oh.
Yeah. And it's just like, you know, they are, despite everything that has happened injury-wise, they are still in first place. They're still in first place. They're in a very good position. And, you know, they are in a position to get even better because they can add at the trading deadline if they want. They can add pitching. They should add pitching, but and potentially hitting too. They should add in multiple areas if they can. Carrasco and JD Davis is definitely coming back imminently, like right after the All-Star break. That's when he's slated to come back. He's going to travel with the team in Pittsburgh. That will be a huge boost to the team. As Linda mentioned, he's tearing the cover off the ball in his rehab assignment. He's ready. And Carlos Carrasco hopefully will not be too far behind. With Carrasco, it's kind of like one of those, because he's had so many like bumps in the road, I'm not going to call it a setback because that's really but because he's had so many bumps in the road, it's one of those like I'll believe it when I see it situations, but like it actually seems close now. Like they're saying, you know, like maybe like he could line up in the fifth game, like after the All-Star break, so that they'll have like a full complement of pitchers. I don't know if they want to push that, but originally they had said like end of July, beginning of August. So like he's close either way. Like he's going to be back within a week or two of the All-Star break. So
I was not nuts great. About them saying, oh, he's going to have like one rehab start and then come back up.
I'm not nuts about that either, but Dave pointed out in Slack that like he was essentially ramped up all the way. Like he basically did have like a full spring training.
Yeah.
So there's that, but I don't know. I think he could probably use one more rehab start.
But it's not just one, like give him two at least.
But we'll see what happens.
The plan is to have Carlos Carrasco. This was Joel Sherman a day ago. Throw one inning Thursday for Brooklyn. So this week he's supposed to be on the mound.
Okay, good. So yeah, Carrasco's really close now, is in like this month close. So that's good. And they desperately need him. And you know, at that point, the rotation will be in much better shape because they'll have,
it'll be an actual five pitcher rotation.
And according to Rojas, his pitches look good. So
yes,
take that with a grain of salt, because obviously the coach is going to say that, but
I mean, the Mets should still add pitching because at this point they are at the limit of their
depth. You can never have enough pitching, even if they had an abundance of pitching.
Especially with that puppy down.
Yeah. Because of the injuries they do have, because let us review, like, okay, at that point they will actually have a five man rotation because they will have, you know, their normal guys at the top. They'll have DeGrom, Strowman, Walker, and then they'll have Carrasco back in the rotation. They'll have Tylor McGill, who has pretty much cemented himself in the rotation at this point by performing well beyond expectations.
Good for him.
Which has been a great story. Of all the guys, of all the like kind of random spot starters they've had to use, he's been the most successful. So good for him. He is fully the David Peterson replacement now. But if we talk about the other like potential starting pitching options that are injured, we've got David Peterson, we've got Corey Oswalt on the injured list, we've now got Thomas Cipucki, who's having ulnar replacement, like reposition surgery, the same surgery that Jacob deGrom and Steven Matz had in the past, which it wasn't a big deal for either of them. So like, hopefully this is something he can rehab. But at this point, you've got like a guy who took a really long time to rehab from Tommy John, and now he's having this other surgery. It's just not great. And so that's him. We've obviously still got other guys on the injured list in the form of like long men slash spot starters. Gazelman's out for the year. We've got Sean Reed Foley on the injured list. We've also got Tommy Hunter on the injured list still with no timeline for return.
I miss Tommy Hunter.
I know, me too. But it's just like, not only are there all these starters on the injured list, but they're kind of all the guys that would give them length are on the injured list. And you know, Jared Eichhoff's been ineffective. And so it's just like, they finally have five guys in the rotation now that you pretty much feel comfortable with in their respective roles. But like beyond that, you have nothing. So they really need to add pitching.
And I was going
to
say, and Syndergaard had a setback too.
Yes. So
he's not, because he was supposed to be due back, I think, this month or early August.
You know, around the same time as Carrasco. But now we're at the point where, and we've discussed this on past podcasts, now we're at the point where Syndergaard, I mean, hopefully he comes back in September. He seems like he's, you know, progressing well in his like current stage of rehab. But like, when you activate a guy in September, like you're at the point where he's like not stretched out for a playoff run. And so you kind of almost need to use him out of the bullpen. Which would be a great option for them.
McGill is only going five innings, so
yeah. Which I mean, is all you can expect.
Walker's in. Go Tigo! Yeah,
the AL is up 4-0 at this point.
No, it's 4-1.
Oh, 4-1. I'm sorry.
JT Realmuto hit a home run.
Okie dokie. For him.
But yeah. So Taijuan Walker's in the game, which is very exciting. But yeah, I mean, things are looking good for the Mets, but they, and they're getting their pretty much their last two, like really key guys back in JD Davis and Carlos Carrasco. And then like really the only key, absolutely key sideline guy at that point is Noah Syndergaard. So they're like pretty healthy. Obviously a lot of their depth is still injured, but like the main guys, like the starting guys are back at this point, which is really good.
Did he get a strikeout? Oh, he fouled it. Oh.
But they could stand to add. So that's kind of where the Mets are at. I hope that they do something with pitching. They don't necessarily
Cole Hamels though.
No.
They're going to his showcase, which is why we're reacting to that. Yeah. But you know, I don't think that's anything. I mean, like, and if it is a thing, I don't think it's the only thing they do. Cause like,
no, Cole, I think Hamels, that was actually more for the clicks.
Negative feelings about Cole Hamels aside, which, you know, there are negative feelings. Like he's not on a team. Like he hasn't pitched this year. So like he needs time to ramp up. The Mets don't have that time, the luxury of that time, you know? So to give a guy like that a flyer, they can as like depth, sure, whatever, but that can't be the only thing they do. They don't necessarily need to add a guy, that would cost a lot. Did he give up something?
No, it was right to the wall. Okay.
Yeah, good. Out to center fielder Chris Taylor.
I was like, no, he can't give up a run. No,
I was going to kind of say continue our streak of good pitchers in the All-Star game.
The Mets don't necessarily need to add a guy that'll cost one of their top prospects with multiple years of team control a la Barrios or Marquez. They could go after that, especially considering their rotation picture for the future. They could stand to do that, but like as far as this year is concerned and their current state of things, they don't necessarily have to go after a guy like that. They could, but they don't have to. So they could go after like a rental, but they could use potentially like, you know, more bullpen help as well. The bullpen has begun to look shaky. Castro looks really bad because of sticky stuff, probably. And so, you know, and the bullpen has just, it's been a heavy workload for them. Like,
it has. And
they're just exhausted. They've
done more than admirably for basically shouldering everything.
And the amount of spot starts guys have done. The amount of bullpen games outside of
DeGrom, Stroman, and Walker.
Double headers, injuries, and even DeGrom, Stroman, and Walker. Like, DeGrom's had a few games where he's left the game early, you know, rightfully so, because he didn't want to be hurt even worse. He did the right thing. But, like, when DeGrom only goes three innings, that's six innings the bullpen has to pitch. So they have pitched a lot of innings.
And he and Walker had short IL stints. So very short. Like, I think he missed like one start. So
yeah.
But still, that's one start that the bullpen had to
pick up. And so, you know, you've got, they could use some help in the bullpen, even though they're mostly healthy. They could use some help. So just like pitching help in general.
No, shout out to Aaron Loop. I don't think we've ever mentioned Aaron Loop.
No, Aaron Loop did wonderfully.
Yeah, Ty. So good. Did Ty get through the inning?
No, he just got a strikeout.
Second out.
Shout out to Aaron Loop, who's been one of the bullpen MVPs this year, and no one talks about him
enough.
No.
He, in the bullpen game on Sunday, obviously, like, everyone's frustrated that they lost that game. It was a frustrating loss, but I feel like lost amongst all that frustration was the fact that Aaron Loop pitched two innings to open that game. And
yes, he did. And it was great.
It was great.
Did he pitch three innings another game?
Yeah, he did. Like 2 weeks ago. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. He pitched three innings in a game like 2 or 3 weeks ago. And
the dude just wants to, you know, drink a beer and have fun.
He's been great this year.
No, Ty. No.
Uh-oh. Not a home run. Please don't say home run. Linda?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Who was this motherfucker?
Mike Zunino?
Who the F?
Rays.
Oh, Mike Zunino's on the Rays. Oh, my God. I really want to name the podcast that, but I can't. I really want to make that the podcast title, but I don't think I can.
No, probably not.
This motherfucker.
Well, you would just have to censor it a little bit.
Yeah, mother effer.
Anyway.
Or put the stars in the UCK.
DeGrom did give up a home run to Trout in 2018.
It's Trout.
Whatever. Oh, Ty. At least he didn't pitch as poorly as Corbin Burns.
As two?
Corbin Burns. He gave up two home runs.
I mean, the NL is kind of like not good to begin with right now. They're losing now 5-1.
Trash for like 10 years. I'm tired of it.
Yeah, it's annoying.
Well, and also the 1 year, 2015, they would have won if they had just bought Jake in an inning earlier instead of Kershaw.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, Ty, not again. No.
In playouts.
You got it.
In playouts. I was going to say, I think game day is ahead of you, Lynn.
Oh.
Okay, well. Wow.
I'm sure that was Ty's one inning. All right, bye-bye, All-Star game. Nobody cares.
Yep. Watch the one part that matters.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I feel like we will go into this a little bit more in greater depth next week, because we are very lucky that Cheryl Ring has agreed to come back on the podcast, which is awesome. So we're going to talk to Cheryl next week. But, you know, we last time we recorded, we didn't talk about Trevor Bauer because we did not want to, you know, ruin the good vibes of the Citi Field parking lot podcast, but we would be amiss if we did not discuss Trevor Bauer at all, because the last time we discussed this, the allegations had literally just come out. Like, it was the same day that the TMZ report came out, and the TMZ report, you know, was not very detailed. It was just like, there are allegations, basically. There is a restraining order, and that was all we knew. Since then, we've learned details about the allegations against Bauer, and they are terrible, like really bad. I will not go into graphic detail about this. I will link the Athletic story. If you want to seek out the details, you can read them yourself. But needless to say, they are bad. And, you know, all I'll say is that the encounter essentially began as consensual, but then the woman accuses him of doing several things she did not consent to, including
and couldn't, including
things while she was unconscious. So it's very, very graphic and very awful. She required treatment at the hospital for traumatic injury. Like, that is where we're at. And so she, as we knew from the initial TMZ report, she issued a, she asked for a temporary restraining order against him, which was granted on June 28th. She also recorded a phone conversation with Bauer, like at the request of the police. She basically, like, he didn't know she was recording him, and she called him and like, basically asked him what he did to her while she was unconscious. And he admitted to, I don't know if he admitted to everything, but he admitted to at least some of the acts. So that's the state of things right now. Bauer is currently on administrative leave.
Oh, and he, of course, he's denying everything.
Oh, yeah. And he continues to deny everything. Which
And his lovely agent, of course.
Good luck with that. And if you notice, and I mean, we'll get to Rachel Luba in a minute, but like, if you notice, like all his statements and stuff, like all his representation agent-wise, like it's not her giving these statements. It's his other agent, the dude, whatever his name is. I don't remember. It's not important. So Bauer is currently on administrative leave while Major League Baseball and the Pasadena Police Department conduct their respective investigations.
Well, and they extended it to the Players Union didn't.
Yes, that's fight, correct. Fight yeah. that. That's correct. So the initial leave is always is 7 days. That's like kind of the default administrative leave for things like this. But they extended that pretty much indefinitely, and it will be in place until at least July 23rd, because that's when his hearing is taking place.
Although we should say it did take them a few days to even take that step to place right. him on administrative leave.
That's correct. MLB dragged its feet like way beyond what was necessary, putting
as they
it on
usually
leave.
Do.
So that kind of, and it's, and I won't say unfairly, because it wasn't unfair that it was put in the hands of the Dodgers, but it should have been taken out of the hands of the Dodgers in the first place, because MLB should have acted swiftly and just placed him on administrative leave immediately. But instead they dragged their feet, and so like he was not on leave yet, and he was still active and with the team and expected to make his next start. And so then the decision was put to the Dodgers because the MLB had not yet acted. And so Dave Roberts at that point said that like that the Dodgers basically made it seem like he was going to make his next start. And Dave Roberts had said, quote, it's out of our hands, which it's literally not. Like,
no,
like you can control who starts.
You control who starts.
The lineups,
you, your front office can put someone. Never mind. It's
which,
not
like,
even.
And I mean, like they were saying, like people were saying like, like the Dodgers can't act if MLB did. They cannot play him though. They don't have the power to like put him on leave, but they don't have to start him.
Play him.
The Mets scratched Matt Harvey when he showed up late to practice.
Yeah. Mets did this. The Mets suspended Matt Harvey themselves.
Yeah, like you can
that's
do
the whole
things
thing. They have the
team.
Power. The Dodgers have the power to suspend him for not like the obviously not administrative leave, but
they didn't even have to suspend him. Like there was an out saying, we don't think his mind is in the right place. He's facing serious allegations. We think it's better somebody else makes that start until we hear from the league. End of story.
Yeah.
Not the dithering answer that Dave Roberts gave.
It's really easy. Oh. It's really easy. But instead they were just like, it's out of our hands. No, it's not.
Yeah, but they're cowards. They were cowards when they signed him, and now they're continuing to be cowards about it.
Absolute cowards. But
and now they don't want to pay him the $40 million.
But ultimately, MLB before his start, MLB did eventually put him on administrative leave, and so obviously at that point, like the Dodgers
got
could start him
eventually,
even if they wanted to. But an interesting wrinkle to this is that the Pasadena Police Department has said that their criminal investigation of Bauer is, quote, bigger than we thought, which can mean a lot of things. Like they did not go into detail about what that means. But it can mean several things. My initial thought, and again, this is my own thought. This is not what they said. This is my own conjecture, is that it could mean he has more than one victim, that this is not the only time he has done this.
That was kind of my feeling too. When
it's kind
I
of
first,
the first thought
yeah.
you get from reading yeah. that, like what else could that mean? Like, I don't know. There's other things that could mean.
Well, because then there was also somebody else weighed in saying, like, it's tricky. Like, if it was anybody else, they would probably already be arrested. But yeah, because of, like, his status, he hasn't. But
I mean, he should be arrested. He'd obviously be out on bail if he was. But
also at the same time, I get why they haven't arrested him, because a guy like him will easily find a technicality and walk.
Yeah, that's true.
So because he has, I think he hired like a dream team of attorneys or something.
Oh, yeah.
He probably hired like the OJ attorneys or whatever.
Got the funds.
Yeah. So you have to make sure your case is airtight before you arrest him, because they'll find anything to get him off on a technicality.
Yeah. And I mean, well, like I said, we're going to have Cheryl on to talk about this next week more, and she can go into more detail about the legal aspects of this, because she's far more informed about that than we are. But I will say that since all of this, since he's been put on leave, since now that we're like kind of just waiting for MLB and for the police to do their investigations, which, I mean, I feel like the listeners on this podcast are sophisticated enough to know this, but I do feel like it bears repeating. The investigation that MLB is performing and the criminal investigation are two separate entities, as in the bar of proof, the burden of proof does not have to be the same, right? Like, the burden of proof to convict him of a crime is much higher. MLB can suspend him if they want, based on the evidence that they are presented. It does not have to rise to the level of his conviction of a crime in order for MLB to impose the maximum penalty.
And we've seen that in past cases with Jose Reyes, with Aroldis Chapman, with, oh my God, Urias, I think. Urias, I'm sorry. I couldn't think of his name and I end up mispronouncing it. They all received the same organization. Yeah.
But they're committed to being better, Allison.
Oh God. All this has precedent. All their charges, I believe, were dropped. At least Chapman's and Reyes's were. But the league still suspended them.
Yeah.
I know. I think what Reyes was 50 or 60 games.
Reyes was 80.
Yeah.
It was 80? Okay.
I thought so. Yeah.
Hang on.
I thought that Reyes.
I'm going to go look this up.
I thought so too.
But I could be wrong. I try to erase all that from my memory.
All right.
But
yeah, through the end of May. So that was like 60 games. Okay. 51 regular season games.
Oh, that's right.
Because 80's usually 80's usually the steroids.
Herrera?
Somebody got 80.
Odubel?
Yeah.
No, Odubeling did 80.
Was it?
It's so sad that we have to go through Ozuna? Like every single. Like how many?
Roberto Ozuna, did he get 80? Did Domingo Germán get 80?
70. Yeah, Ozuna got 75.
Okay, close. I think 80 is the max. Like they can suspend under that policy. Anyway. Oh Christ! Yeah, it is kind of disturbing that we have to like go through our memories of the many, many domestic violence perpetrators in MLB.
But the point of that is that it's not unheard of for players to have charges dropped, their criminal charges dropped, but for the league to suspend them.
Right. Like the point is the point being that like that is a response to the innocent until proven guilty due process crowd. Like no one is saying that Trevor Bauer is not entitled to due process. He will get due process. And that is what is happening for him right now.
But he's doing court July 23rd.
Literally. But he doesn't have to commit an act, be convicted of an actual crime for MLB to suspend him. That is up to Major League Baseball. And, you know,
like baseball is a private entity. Like this is his employer. They could like if you did something fucked up at your job, they can do what they could suspend you. They could fire you.
They can fire you, and like you know, you don't have to commit a crime. Your job can decide to fire you because you did something bad.
If I showed up at work like drunk or something, and they told me you're out of here, I have no legal recourse. They're my employer.
Right.
Yep.
So both those things are happening. We don't know yet. Neither investigation is complete, and it likely is not close to complete, because they are going to try to be thorough about this. So, you know, in the meantime, the only thing that's really happened, other than like Bauer is on administrative leave awaiting all of this, is that the Dodgers have like made moves to distance themselves from him. So they've canceled his bobblehead day, and several Dodgers players have unfollowed Bauer on social media. So like, that is good. I mean, like, I'm not going to say that that's
bad. And they pulled his merchandise.
They pulled his merch and all that. So like, those things are good. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to say that they're bad. But it's kind of the bare minimum. I mean, on one hand, I was like encouraged to see, especially the players unfollowing him, even though it seems like a very,
that's important.
Yeah, to me, that was more important than the merchandise getting pulled.
It's very much a symbolic gesture, but it's important because, again, any change needs to come from his peers. Any change that's going to happen in Major League Baseball with regard to the culture around how women are treated is going to happen via their peers. Like,
well, in the former Dodger, what Dodger was it who spoke out that was like, what the hell are you doing?
I know.
Dave Stewart? No.
Yeah, I think it was him. Hang on. I'll look it up. I'm just typing.
Because he wouldn't show up to like a reunion because he was
He basically said that they were not doing enough with this Bauer thing.
And he's so true.
And he's
100% correct.
He's right. Dave Stewart. So like, while it's good that the players are unfollowing him because it means that he's being like ostracized in the clubhouse, probably, which is these things are good and they're good positive steps. They're kind of the absolute bare minimum, and we shouldn't let the Dodgers skate by here and that just like, you know, let them sort of distance themselves from him and pretend that it's not their problem. Like, oh, we're just going to shove that off to the side, not associate ourselves with him. No, you have to own your shit. Like, you have to own your shit.
Like, you were warned. Like,
you signed this guy. You chose this.
Yeah. Like, you chose every this. Woman was screaming at you saying, like, it was always a toxic combination. Uh-huh. You had somebody who had a weird relationship with women, given his, you know, dating rules.
Ugh. And had him literal harassment of women.
Yeah, literal harassment of women. So you already had
signs were there.
The warning signs were there.
Red flags everywhere.
Yeah, red flags everywhere, warning signs everywhere. But now you gave him a big payday. You gave him all the attention he wanted. You gave him the accolades. You're giving him the press he wants. So now he got away scot-free. The power he wants.
That's the biggie.
You're feeding into his ego. So he already had a bad relationship with women. And now you're giving him everything he wanted and then some. And so now I'm sure he probably felt like he could do no wrong. And he could just take whatever he wanted, could do whatever he wanted. So it was like you lit a match and the powder keg exploded. And everybody saw that. Women saw this coming and nobody listened. We were trying to tell you this was going to happen.
There were a few people in the Amazing Avenue comments saying, oh, the ladies were right. And we're like,
shocking. We know.
I mean, it doesn't matter that we were right. I mean, we knew this and you didn't listen yet again.
Nobody listened.
The damage is already done. Like, I'm not.
It didn't have to be this way.
I'm not taking any joy in being right here.
No, because, it's like, not an I told you so kind of situation. It's just like, please listen to us when we.
Because there's now a victim. Now a victim that has been done irreparable harm because nobody listened to women. Like, this is just. And the Dodgers do not get to wash their hands of this. They don't get to just pull his merch,
given their history,
pull his bobbleheads and walk away. No, you have to own your shit. You chose this. You signed this guy knowing the red flags that were there. And he sat up there during his press conference and pretended he was going to change. And you just took him at his word and he didn't change at all. In fact, he got worse.
Well, and then the Mets need to own it too.
Exactly.
They don't get to walk away from this either.
The Mets got bailed out by the Dodgers. It's not out of lack of interest that he did not.
No, they got bailed out by Trevor Bauer's choice.
Yep.
That's it.
And when is Sandy Alderson going to be held to account that he wanted to sign this abuser?
Not just that. He signed abusers in the past.
Exactly.
Well, and he went so far as to call him an entertainment.
Yeah, no.
No.
And literally all the baseball media who contributed to his cult of personality by writing him off, by writing off his behavior as quirky or unique or whatever other fucking
controversial,
whatever other euphemistic word you want to use to describe it, are now have the
problematic.
Now have the nerve to clutch their pearls and write these pieces about Trevor Bauer shouldn't make his next start. It's like you contributed to this. Mm-hmm. Ken Rosenthal. Also, hello, yeah, Ken Rosenthal. Gonna name some fucking names here.
Ken Rosenthal had to rewrite an article three times because he screwed up the first two and then gave Bauer a platform to put his own name out there and put his own stamp on it and just to defend himself. You do not have to keep giving Trevor Bauer a platform. You do not.
Hello, Ken Rosenthal. Hello, Jeff Passan, who wrote about his like underdog story and like mentality or whatever when he was drafted. Hello, you contributed to this cult of personality.
Well, you
now
have,
he's done something awful.
You have ESPN shouting about how Shohei Ohtani can speak English, but they have been deadly silent on this topic. There has not been. Buster Olney said he had a fun podcast discussing Trevor Bauer.
Oh boy.
He called it, this is a good one. This one was a fun one where we discussed Trevor Bauer. Well, I'm glad Trevor Bauer sexually assaulting somebody was a fun podcast for you.
I'm glad that's fun for you. It's not fun for us.
It's not fun for us.
No.
We don't enjoy doing this.
Multiple times.
We don't enjoy doing
this. That was their one time they discussed Trevor Bauer was one podcast that was described as fun. Thanks, ESPN.
Cool. Very cool.
And when you are partly responsible for
this. We have to discuss him again.
Yeah. And, you know, unsurprisingly, so we will not only hold men to account for this, we will hold women to account. Unsurprisingly, Rachel Luba is still defending him, saying like, the truth will out, basically. Like, you know, all the truth will come out and he will be exonerated, blah, blah, blah. So that defense that was thrown out of him at the time of, well, he's represented by a woman and she certainly wouldn't stand for him harming women in any substantial way. Side-eyeing you, Alyssa Rose and Howie Rose family. Mm-hmm. That was their defense of him, was basically like, but he's represented by a woman. She wouldn't put up with that behavior. She's defending that behavior still actively. Now that he has literally committed a sexual assault, she is still standing by him. So where's your defense of that now? And
her other client is also accused of sexual assault.
Yes, yep. Please.
She has no morals. It's all about her image and, you know, how to get her more money. That's all she cares about.
Women will uphold power structures, even if they are the patriarchy. They will uphold the patriarchy if it allows them some benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And in her case, it is power and money. And fame.
Oh, I'm sure. Did I tweet this? Maybe. I don't know. But I forget who I was talking with. Like, she'll probably get a Barstool podcast in a couple years and she'll be fine.
So what does she care? What does she care for his victim? Nothing.
She doesn't.
So
somebody will sell out and give her a couple million dollars to have a Barstool podcast, being that she'll be fine. And she gets to walk away from this like she did nothing wrong.
And, you know, Alyssa Rose has the absolute nerve to tweet, like, because obviously people started giving her shit immediately after this happened because she was one of his most ardent defenders and was talking about how, like, not only was she doing the normal stuff of like wanting the Mets to sign him desperately, she literally said flat out that Trevor Bauer does not present a threat to women. She said that straight out. So, like,
yep.
That is objectively false, and people saw this coming and you just didn't listen to them. And so now she's being called to task on that. And she responded with, well, I refuse to apologize.
I wasn't a fortune teller.
I refuse to apologize because we couldn't possibly have foreseen, except all of us foresaw.
No way.
Yeah, no, she's like, you can't be yelled at when it starts raining months later. It's like, yeah, but it was cloudy and there were storm clouds on the horizon. Like, we knew it was going to rain.
She acts like you need to have some sort of fortune telling powers. And it's like, geez, all of us are real special then. We should get employed telling fortunes or something. Like, there's a lot of fortune tellers out there then. Alyssa.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah, funny how like there was no self-reflection saying, oops, I screwed up. She turned herself into the victim. Like, everybody, stop being mean to me. I made a tweet. Stop being mean to me. I wasn't a fortune teller. It's like, you're still denying your role in this.
And no one's actually being mean to her. They're just telling her that she was wrong about something.
Yeah.
and like begging her to, like, you know, have some accountability for, you know, contributing to this.
Accountability.
Just say,
what's
I was
that?
Wrong. I made Please. A misjudgment. That's it.
She's nepotism gone wrong.
Yeah, seriously. Like, it's just like her there's never any reflection, never any apologies. You know, no. the Dodgers could easily just be like, we made a misjudgment when we signed him. We overlooked these things because we thought that he would help our baseball club, and that was wrong.
Well, has anybody from
very easy to say that, but instead, no.
Did not a single person.
Instead, they're just gonna quietly pull his merch and pretend this never happened.
Nobody from the Dodgers, nobody from the media, nobody from Driveline, which was all doing his science crap and made him look like a brain genius. Pitching Ninja was another big one. I'm sorry, but
yeah, I know people like his gifts and everything, but he like partnered with him.
Yeah. I stopped following him after he did that. I was just disgusted.
Bauer a big platform. And so he is one of the main culprits, and nobody's apologized. And this is the problem. Like we said, there's women, Jessica Kleinschmidt.
Yep.
She just quietly deleted her podcast that mentioned him, and that was it. Like, you could just delete something and pretend it you never did it and make it go away. This victim doesn't get to pretend this didn't happen and make it go away.
Yep. Can't and I just, feel like people delete are these traumatic memories.
No,
and people are waiting this out too.
Oh yeah, they're hoping that people
for
forget.
Sure. Forget, or that he just is exonerated, or doesn't
get settled, or
because the Bauer merchandise is only pulled while this investigation is going on. I'm sure if it goes further, it'll be pulled indefinitely. But if he's not, they're just going to put it back on the shelves.
Oh yeah, for
so,
sure.
If there's money to be made, they'll absolutely do it.
Which is why going just back. As we mentioned earlier, the players unfollowing them is a little deeper,
yeah,
a little more substantive.
That's a sign saying you're not welcome here.
Yeah.
But especially the players who did it. Mookie Betts was a big one. Like, clearly, he's probably a leader in that clubhouse. Justin Turner's probably a leader in that clubhouse.
Ooh.
Right. It's good that they're doing that, but I am asking for them to do more because they need to actually speak out and say something. Use your platform to say something. Say this is wrong.
Use it for good.
Say this is wrong.
Somebody, besides Dave Stewart. Dave Stewart is literally the only person who has said what he's done is wrong.
Yeah, the only person associated with the Dodgers. And now, you know, as we've said before, let's not forget, this is the organization that covered up another sexual assault.
Mm-hmm.
Perpetrated by a player who is playing in the major leagues right now. Not on the Dodgers, but, you know, playing in the major leagues right now, who they benefited from by trading, and the organization that has the literal crimes.xlsx spreadsheet. So, like,
and the whole Gabe Kapler, you know, not
well. That was
the
cover up of the sexual assault perpetrated by Gabe Kapler, who is still employed in baseball.
I was going to say, I thought you meant a player, not the manager. Sorry,
the manager is still employed, and the player is still employed.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, another one. Jessica Mendoza wrote a whole puff piece on Luba saying,
yep.
Oh, she's going to change the game.
All
she's breaking the glass.
Yeah, there have been a lot of puff pieces on her.
Oh, all those girl boss pieces on Luba. Hashtag girl boss.
Yeah, where are you now, Mendoza? She's still a girl boss. Oh, is this what you mean by changing the game? Allowing more sexual assaults in the game? Allowing more people to get away with it? But is that what the game is standing for now?
Anyway, we will have Cheryl Ring on next week to talk about this more. We'll go in more in greater detail with her about the legal details of this and, like, you know, how the victim was able to obtain the restraining order, and, you know, what what he may or may not be convicted of, on what grounds. And also, like, Cheryl has a piece that we will, you know, go in greater detail about next week, about her, you know, experience with Bauer and his legal team, which is awful. And I mean, the piece is good. The piece is good. What happened was awful. And so we'll talk to Cheryl about all of that. But needless to say that anybody who has, you know, tried to speak out about Bauer in any fashion has either been deplatformed or threatened or worse. And, you know, those results are, you know, those impacts are worse if you're a woman, worse still if you're a person of color, and worse still if you're trans. So, like, you know, it's just anybody who tries to speak out about this has faced some sort of consequence in some way of being, you know, harassed or deplatformed or threatened by Bauer or his followers or his associates. So that continues to go on. But in the meantime, we will end the show this week, like we always do, with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about something that is making us happy this week, baseball related or otherwise. Linda Cerevich, what is your walk-off win for this week?
My walk-off win, the timing was a little off, but JT and Amy and Dennis, big Mets Twitter accounts, and just lovely people, asked if I wanted to go to the Renegades game, because of course I'm in the Hudson Valley. The Renegades are my team, even though they are now owned by the Yankees.
them too, because the Somerset Patriots are now owned by them too.
Yes, yes. Oh. Renegades are Yankees affiliate now.
My poor Gates. Ugh. Oh, what have they done to my boy? There are pinstripes everywhere. Oh, it was awful. But they were playing the Cyclones, so I legit did not know who to root for, because I'm like, the Cyclones are obviously the Mets, but the Renegades are my home team. Like, I've always loved the Renegades. I used to go to Renegades games all the time because they're so close and easy to get to.
Yeah.
So it turned out to be a doubleheader. But of course, Francisco Alvarez was in the Futures game, so he was not there. And Brett Beatty was also in the Futures game, but he also got promoted to Double A, so he was not there. So I missed all the Mets top prospects except Ronnie Mauricio. And Mauricio is huge.
Oh, he's like, big in real life.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is massive. There's no way he can stick it short. Like, he's just a big kid. It's like we were sitting behind the visitors' dugout and behind the Cyclones, and from our perspective, it looked like he had a duck going into the dugout when he was coming in from the field. But the Cyclones got blown out 7-1 in the first game, and then the second game, the Renegades catcher hit 3 home runs. He was their entire offense, and the Renegades threw a no-hitter. So I can say I've seen a no-hitter, but I still don't know if I'm happy about it, because I still don't know what to cheer for.
Just go with both.
Yeah, so it was cool. Like, you know, I've never seen a no-hitter, even if it was a minor league game. And that was my first Renegades game I've been to in a few years. So, you know, minor league baseball is just fun. The atmosphere is fun. But I just wanted a Renegade shirt, and everything had the goddamn pinstripes on
it. It was the worst. I went to the team store I'll build off that and like kind of do a cheating, like 1.5 walk-off wins, for myself, because I also went to a Renegades game in the same series, because I like the week I took off from work last week for vacation, Michael and I stayed with his mom in White Plains, and so we were like kind of close to the Renegades stadium, and so we went to the same series where they were playing the Cyclones. And to make a very long story short, we stopped in New Paltz, which is where Michael used to live, so he wanted to go, like, you know, see some of his old haunts. We met one of his old library friends for lunch before the game in New Paltz, and we had some time to kill between lunch and when we had to drive to the stadium for the game. So we decided to take like a nice afternoon walk in New Paltz, and it completely downpoured. And so we got like soaked through to the bone. Like it was basically like we both jumped in a pool. So and we had no change of clothes. We were stranded. Like there was nowhere to go. And so we just kind of had to dry off in the car and just like sit there in the car while it's still downpouring and like wait it out. And then we went to the Renegades Cyclones game, which had an hour long rain delay. And during that, I like went into the team store because I'm still like wet. And so I went into the team store to try to change my clothes, like to buy some Renegades clothes. And I was like, this all has Yankees insignia. I'm not going to buy this.
Like when they were the Rays affiliate, you had no clue what affiliate they were with. Like they had their own logo. They did their own thing. But now it's like Yankees. Got to have the pinstripes.
Everything has pinstripes and like the interlocking, except instead of an interlocking NY, it's like an interlocking HV in the same font.
Yes.
Because it's so Hudson Valley.
Yes. Like there was this gorgeous shirt that I loved where it's probably the Palisade Mountains. And then it's got the Hudson River because it's their logo. It's the mountains. It's the Hudson River cutting through the mountains. And then I'm guessing it's the Newburgh Beacon Bridge because then it's a bridge going, connecting mountains, going over the Hudson. And it's beautiful. It's a nice logo. And then the goddamn pinstripes are in the back of it. I was like, why? And then they had to play New York when they won. And they had to do the YMCA. I'm like, you're not the Yankees. You're the Hudson Valley Renegades. It's like, you gotta have that Yankee branding now. And it sucks. Like it really did. It just left such a bad taste in my mouth. Like, ew, you gotta, it's just Yankees everywhere. It's like, but be your own thing. And they killed, because there used to be a family of raccoons, used to be their mascot.
I was waiting for the mascot because I have a really close friend from college who grew up in Poughkeepsie. And so like I was texting her that I was at the game. I was like, I'm at the Hudson Valley Renegades game. She goes, say hi to the raccoons for me. And they never came out.
Aww. The raccoon came out because they totally redid him. And he's like, scary now because they used to be really cute. It was a whole family. It was Rookie, Renee, and their son Rascal. And now there's just Rookie, who I don't even think that's his name anymore because they can't have names on the back of their jersey. So I don't know what the mascot's name is. And Renee and Rascal were nowhere to be found. They murdered Renee and Rascal.
Raccoon murder. Geez.
Well, according to JT, he's like, the correct term is they euthanized.
Oh, dear.
This is supposed to be walk-off wins. We're talking about animal euthanization.
They euthanized the raccoons. But I did get my, it's not tipsy scoop. It's like something similar.
Oh, yeah. I saw that too when we were there. There's like boozy ice cream of something.
It was boozy ice cream. Yes. So I ended up getting my boozy ice cream and I put up because then like the guy serving it to me because then you get unlimited toppings. Oh, and I eventually did find a Renegade shirt that just said Hudson Valley Renegades. And then it's like home plate, but it's still clearly Yankees blue, but whatever. It's a shirt. And it has no pinstripes on it. But I got the ice cream. And they had a kid and he's like serving it. And he's like, because you get unlimited toppings. And he was like, oh, I just find it funny when people get the boozy ice cream and put gummy bears on it. I was like, you know what? Give me the gummy bears.
I want it.
Yeah. And I'm like, you put that in my head and I want my gummy bears now. So I had boozy ice cream and gummy bears. And I was very, very happy.
That's great.
So I have been complaining, but it was a fun night. And I got to see, I've never seen a prospect make the majors. And I'm really hoping now Mauricio can be that guy, whether it's with the Mets or somebody else, because he does look at least exciting. And
yeah, for sure.
If the Cubs want him, they can have him.
I was lucky enough that I went to the game like 3 days before Linda did. And so Beatty was still on the team and Alvarez was not in the futures game. So in the game that I went to, the Renegades Cyclones game, we saw all three of Alvarez, Beatty, and Mauricio, and Alvarez and Beatty both hit a dong. And so that was very fun. The Cyclones still lost though. It was like a complete seesaw.
Why are they so bad? I don't understand.
Oh, their pitching's very bad.
Oh, really?
I mean, the Mets have no pitching in their entire organization. Like, none at all.
Well, maybe they should trade for the Renegades guy who threw the no-hitter.
Yeah, maybe. But there was actually the game that Michael and I went to was a poorly pitched game by both sides. I think the Cyclones ended up losing like 8-7 or something. It was like one run and it was close and it was like back and forth the whole game. Like every inning, each team would score like two runs. And the funny thing was that like there were like four balks because these dudes just don't know how to like pick guys off or like not step like to the bag when they're, you know, like they just don't know how to not balk because they're all like 17 years old. So there was just like a million balks in the game, which was really funny. But yeah, Mauricio's giant IRL, like he's so tall. And he actually
I have so many stalker shots of Mauricio because like this is the only guy I have a chance to see.
And Michael ended up getting, so we sat like right behind home plate and Michael ended up getting like, he was like, I'm going to be a prospect reporter now. And he took videos of like every Beatty, Mauricio and Alvarez at bat. So he got footage of both the dongs and it was good footage. And he tweeted it and was like, I'm a prospect reporter now. And I was like, very good. It was fun. And Mauricio didn't do anything, with the bat while we were there, but he did make a really good defensive play at short. So I know he's probably not sticking there, but he looked good in the field when we were there. So,
that's what we were saying too. Like, there were scouts there. I'm like, did you mark that down? Like, he can play a shift. Like, write that down.
Yeah, there were a ton of scouts at the game that we were at too.
Yeah, there was a ton there too for us.
But that's like part of my walk-off win because that was like kind of part of my vacation last week. My vacation last week was kind of like very much a chill, like sort of staycation almost with like mini trips, which was nice. Like we didn't like, travel, like go like fly somewhere for the week. I took the week off work last week and it started off with, our game at, our Mets game at Citi Field.
Oh, yeah.
So that was the Monday, although that was already off work cause that was part of the July 4th holiday. But then I took the whole week off after that. And Michael and I went to the Renegades game one of the days. And then over the weekend, starting Friday, we went up to Burlington, Vermont to visit my brother. And so it was just like a lovely weekend with my parents and my brother. And then like the whole week before that, we were with Michael's mom in White Plains. We got to go to Decadent Ales, which is a brewery nearby where she lives. And we did trivia and it was fun. We spent July 4th with her and my parents came up and hung out and it was just a really nice time. And then we went to Vermont to see my brother. We did this lovely 8.5-mile walk/hike down the Crescent bike trail. And it was just like an island bike trail, actually, I think it's called. And it was just like absolutely lovely on the lake. Gorgeous. Vermont's just so pretty in the summer. It sucks in the winter, but it's just like absolutely gorgeous in the summer. We went to an awesome brewery, Burlington Beer Company, which my brother introduced us to. It was awesome. Just had a really nice week off from work. Much needed rest. So that's my walk-off win. Kellyanne Healy, what is your walk-off win for this week?
Mine is totally different. So I was bouncing in between the Mets game on Sunday and the UEFA final between England and Italy. And Italy ended up winning on penalty kicks, but it was such a dramatic game because England scored like in the first 2 minutes. And it was just Italy playing defense at that point until the second half when Leonardo Bonucci tied it up. And from that point on, England was just, it seemed like they were playing to get to the penalty kick round. And they got to the penalty kick round and failed. And that's how Italy won.
Don't go 2-for-5 in penalties is my recommendation not lose.
Well, I was at my uncle has a pool. So I was there with my aunt and uncle. And then my other aunt and uncle came. And my uncle's Italian. So he was keeping us updated. He was like, 1-1! One, 2-2, overtime.
The other thing I really loved about the Italian team, just overall, one of the players, Spinazzola, was injured in the semifinal. And they kind of like rallied around him and had the Spina song. It was just like, ole, 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 Spina, Spina. And like, you see them after the game doing that song and you see Spinazzola with his crutches. Cause I think he tore, I want to say something in his leg. I can't remember exactly what he tore, but you see him with the canes hopping around and waving the canes in the air. It was great.
Ruben Tejada style.
Yeah. I thought that too. I was like, oh my God, it's Ruben Tejada.
Oh, no, I was going to say he's a little more enthusiastic than Tejada. He was like losing it. He completely was like hopping on the stage to get his medal and dancing afterward. But like the canes were just flying in the air. It's like, oh, watch it. You're going to hurt somebody, man. But yeah, it was an enjoyable team to watch in this tournament. And I'm just very happy they won because they've been doing badly these past couple years. They were eliminated early on in the World Cup and eliminated in the previous European tournament. So it was good to see them do well. Also, Italy, Roberto Mancini is just hilarious to watch as a coach.
Yes. Italy has the distinction of being the only European nation to win the men's. I think there was a time when the women's was the same country, but to win the men's Euro final and Eurovision in the same year.
Mm.
Fun fact, which is boss. Italy in general killing it this year.
My boss
in some
turned
ways.
Me on to this new store. I don't know how new they are when they opened, but they're like a little British store right down the block from where I work. So on Friday we were like it's quiet, let's kind of like just blow off work for a little bit and go shopping at this little English store because it's so cute inside. And then she was like, and their candies and their chocolates and their teas are really good. So me, my boss, and my coworker went shopping at this little English shop, and their tea was fantastic and their chocolates. Because it's Cadbury, but it's got honeycomb in it. Oh my God.
Ooh, that sounds awesome.
That's always,
if you ever find this cat, it's called Crunchy and it's Cadbury and it's got honeycomb in it. They highly recommended it and they were not lying. And then I got a little jams. I got a strawberry vanilla tea that's really good. But well, anyway, the owner was like, oh, we're going to do a big thing. And the owner had a fabulous British accent. He was like, we're gonna, and it was him, his wife, and his daughter. His wife is from America, and then his daughter also had a British accent. He was like, either way, I'm getting drunk. He's like, either I'm gonna be really happy or I'm just gonna be really hungover. So I'm like, I'm thinking of him too. After they lost, I'm like, oh no, that poor guy.
Oh,
yeah. I was like, yeah, he's gonna be really drunk.
I was definitely rooting for Italy in the final because even though I'm not Italian, but I was an Italian minor in college. And so I was fluent in Italian for a little bit there. I'm very rusty now, so I can't say I'm fluent anymore. But I used to be, and I spent some time in Italy in college. I studied abroad, foreign language trip. And so I have a soft spot in my heart for Italy. So I usually root for them in the international, like European, like in the World Cup and the other soccer tournaments, since America never makes it because the American men suck. So I root for Italy, but I have to say that, so like I heard the whole game on the radio because again we were driving back from Vermont, so I heard the game on the radio, and so I didn't watch the video of the final, like the penalties, until later. But I will say the English teenager breaking down was like really upsetting.
Oh my God, I watched, it was like, it was heartbreaking. And then of course the fans were horrible afterwards.
Yeah, don't be
where
fucking racist.
Yeah, I mean, and everybody's like saying, oh, England is so like classy. No, it's not just an English problem. Trust me, Italy has that problem too.
Yeah,
I mean, like, it's all the sports leagues have this issue.
I was seeing I was seeing a lot of kind of like more lefty Twitter accounts like tweeting about like, you know, like England. I mean, like obviously England has done colonialism. So like I saw a lot, but like let's not pretend that like Italy winning is the anti-racist result. There are no angels here.
Although it was kind of funny, like they're like, we claim Meghan, like because they met Meghan Markle. So they were like, so they had like Meghan Markle on the Italian
one. I did find it funny though that all the like the Scottish and Irish folks were like wearing Italy jerseys.
Italy's, and, like, yeah.
In Derry, the Irish town that is featured in Derry Girls, they like in the like Free Derry sign, like the famous town sign, they like put a little Italy flag on top of it. And I was like, all right, like you guys have the right, because if anybody hates England, it's Scotland and Ireland.
Scotland and Ireland.
Yeah. So you guys have the right.
Scotland especially.
I don't want to hear like white Americans lecture about English racism, but I feel like, you know, Irish and Scottish people have the right to hate it.
But it's just like those poor, the youngest one was 19 years old. And I think that was Sokka. And
yeah,
Rashford, I believe is 21.
Yeah.
And I don't remember the third one's name. And I think he's like 22, but they're all super young.
Super young. And like two of them, the manager subbed them in
which is so stupid because they didn't have a lot of playing time throughout the tournament. And
you're suddenly putting this huge burden on the shoulders of these black teenagers who you know are going to get like absolutely crucified by these insane soccer fans after.
What are the effects on that one too?
Like, it seems questionable, the decision making to me.
No, it was absolutely questionable. And I said that on Twitter. I was like, what was the English coach thinking?
Yeah.
It was a dick move all around.
Yeah. But you know, it was a good match though. So
yes.
That's very, very, very
except for that random English goal in the beginning, which like came out of nowhere. It was like, wait.
Sometimes teams get caught flat-footed in the first like 2 minutes and they're not ready.
Yep.
It happens. Anyway, that does it for the show this week. Like I mentioned earlier, we will have Cheryl Ring on next week, so look forward to that. But in the meantime, you can go to AmazingAvenue.com, check out all of our fantastic content. We've got the draft tracker up for you guys right now. We've got our awesome minor league team. You should not only listen to the From Complex to Queens podcast, but you should check out all of their draft profiles of all the guys the Mets are drafting right now. It's the only reason I know even who they are besides Kumar Rocker. So thank you, Miners team. You guys are the best. Check out all of their content. And in the meantime, we have Home Run Derby, All-Star content. And we will be back with all of our regular content next week as games resume in the second half. So you can check all of that out at AmazingAvenue.com. Follow Amazing Avenue on all of the social medias, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can follow this show on Twitter at A Pod of Their Own. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Servich.
And you, Kellyanne?
At LRBELLAREBEE. I'm going to spell it out this time. I don't think I didn't spell it out on the last interview I did.
Yeah. Follow all of us on Twitter. Follow the show on Twitter. You can email the show, aa.apodoftheirown@gmail.com. You can subscribe to our entire suite of awesome pods. If you subscribe to Amazing Avenue Audio, wherever you get your podcasts from, please rate and review the show. It really helps people find it. The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying in podcasting. We will see you all in the second half.